Welcome to Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust, covering car culture and the automotive world with Shane Osborne, Brady Wright, and Steve, the producer, Johan. Let's see what's up this week.
And here is what's happening Tuesday, January 29th. 2019. This episode of Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust. I am your ever so humble. I am the most humble guy on the planet.
Yeah,
just ask
humble.
Humble. If you look up humble in the dictionary, Brady Wright. That's the picture right there.
Yes.
We have Master Mechanic and Metal Butcher Shane Osborne with us. Hi.
Good evening.
Welcome back. And Steve, the producer, Johan, who's working on his secret plan to build a nitrous-boosted shopping cart.
Nitrous-boosted.
Still working.
Oh,
still
yeah.
Working.
Yeah.
Cool.
Back to the blacktop is first as usual, and that's where we check out what's going on in the automotive world. Steve has labored unceasingly since last week to collect a veritable cornucopia of meaningful stuff. What do you got today, sir?
Thank you very much. As we're all sitting around in the evening drinking coffee, it's kind of funny. I'm like, oh, we all got coffee tonight.
Yeah, people don't know. We record this show at about 7 o'clock in the evening.
West Coast time.
West Coast, yeah. So here we are, loaded up with massive pots full of coffee. We're going to all be up till about 4 in the morning.
Yes, we are.
It's just to stay warm. It's freezing outside.
It is. It was 36 today. And people in the Midwest who are at negative 55 are going to say, you guys are a bunch of
weenies.
Yeah.
Well, okay, we are. Let's just
there's a reason I don't live in the Midwest.
That's right.
That's exactly right. Well, next 3 years, we'll see Toyota rolling out 19 new models, including sedans, within its mix in the new models. And I thought it was kind of interesting that they're making a big deal about, rolling out 19 new models. And that's a lot.
Especially sedans.
It is. In 1 year.
See, Toyota's smart. They're going to do sedans.
3 years, they're going to do sedans.
Yeah, because the big three are kind of backing away from them. So there's the market, Not that just because Ford and the other guys are not going to make sedans doesn't mean people don't want them.
No. I think
there's a market.
Yeah. I think there is. And I think the imports are going to clean up on this aspect of it.
Oh, yeah.
Subaru resumed production at two plants in Japan after they were shut down for nearly 2 weeks due to a defect on a power steering component, which involved the Forester, Impreza, and Crosstech models. Now, what's good about this is they found it ahead of time, and they closed down the plant and said, we're fixing it. Now they fixed it. Rather than letting all these things go out into the wild blue yonder, and there might be some recalls maybe, but I got a feeling that
they got a handle on it.
They got a handle on it
so
real
quick. So what you're saying is that these power steering components were not manufactured by Takata? Is that where we're going with this?
Because
I think,
Yes.
Yeah.
No.
Just a toss,
I mean, just wondering.
Most guys are.
Well, the fact is they caught it.
That's perfect.
That's what you want to happen.
Yeah.
Nissan said it's facing a probe by the SEC looking into the accuracy of its executive pay disclosures.
Uh-oh.
A probe stemming from the arrest of the former Nissan Motor Company chairman, Carlos Ghosn, last November in Japan, who is still sitting in jail awaiting multiple charges, including, this is for Nissan itself, is including allegations that they failed to disclose $88 million in income, which, according to the Japanese prosecutors, connect to Nissan unreported pay scheme. So he got $88 million, but they are saying, but that's not showing up on the books the way it should. What's going on here? Hey, Nissan, we're going to come after you now.
Yeah, shades of Al Capone.
Oh, my goodness.
Yep.
He's making over $11 million a year. He doesn't own any companies. None of it's in his name. Well, they found him eventually.
And that's how they nailed him, was that he didn't get his taxes.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah, The Untouchables was on just the other night.
Which version?
The
Costner movie?
The movie, yes. Kevin Costner.
There was a series in the 90s called The Untouchables.
Robert Stack was the star of that one.
Huh. Yeah.
Meaningless Trivia 101. Don't know why I know that.
In a related story.
Related story.
Nissan CEO Hiroto, and I won't pronounce his last name, plans to step down from his post now that Carlos Ghosn has resigned in a move designed to make the transition into the next phase of the partnership between Nissan and Renault easier.
Renault.
He's just supposed to keep his $88 million.
Well, this is a different guy, and he's tied to Carlos, and it's like maybe they're cleaning house and saying, we want to be bought out, or we want to merge, and we need to get rid of all this stuff over here, No red flags.
We need to appear not to be corrupt.
That's exactly right.
I'm sorry. Did that sound cynical? I didn't mean for that to sound cynical.
Well, $88 million for their CEO? Come on.
Chump that's change. That's a week's worth of profit.
That's lunch money.
Really?
Yeah.
I mean, how much money do you suppose that company, seriously, profits per year? $88 million is chump change. It's nothing.
Yeah, well, the workers would like to get a little more, I think.
I don't know why you'd say that. They're perfectly happy with their one meal of rice a day. I mean, what? I'm sorry. Is it Tuesday?
You're just playing the devil's advocate all over the place. Well, GM adds new investment and subsequent jobs to its Spring Hill, Tennessee plant to build a new fuel-efficient engine and its new three-row Cadillac crossover. So, in other words, they're building a new fuel-efficient engine. So
that's kind of cool.
Are not efficient.
Well, they're newer. They're more fuel efficient.
Yeah. And it's a three row.
Yeah.
Does it say in there?
It's a crossover and the XT6.
Yeah.
They're also working on that as well. So they're hiring.
But is it a new chassis? Is it for the crossover? Because Chevy's got a couple of those, and GM borrows a lot. I just wonder if they're repurposing or if they're actually building a new.
Well, I just know they're going to hire about 200 people there. And,
that's kind of good.
That's cool.
Good news. I like that.
But on the flip side, Canada has decided that a lot of people up there don't like what they did to their plants. And according to Uniform, that's Unifor, the union that represents Canada, automakers, workers may opt to boycott GM vehicles if the automaker does not reverse its plan to close the two plants up there. So
they could always go back to calling them Acadians, and then,
Acadians.
Do you remember that? It was the Canadian Chevrolet for years.
Acadians. You can vote with your pocketbook.
Yeah, sure,
if you don't like things, you go, hey, there's that Nissan over there. Let's buy that. Oh, no, not that one. But let's buy the Subaru, because they're really thinking about me. And let's forget the GM guys. Well, let's let the price to slide. So, And sticking with the GM, the brand new Camaro is coming out with a 10-speed automatic.
I'm sorry. I'm sure that's cool and the technology is great.
When I see
10-speed or when I hear
it,
yeah, absolutely. I'm like, it's a 10-speed. Wow. I wonder if it has derailleurs.
It's going to make it go.
Come on.
You know you're right.
You know you're right. You went there. Yeah, yeah.
10-speed. I think mine's a 12-speed. But nonetheless.
Derailleur gears.
They did choose 10-speed, didn't they?
Yep.
So does that mean a high drive and a low drive?
It's got a banana seat,
with five
too.
Drives in between?
Yes, that's it.
It's like, okay, you have
two transmissions.
You have the street version, which is the high
the
fives, and then
they
when
gotta,
you want to race,
they got to go either
9-speed
or 11. I'm sorry, 10-speed just has too many.
Just, yep.
Of course, but, that may just be a certain age, Because
my bike that I've got is a 12-speed. It's not a 10-speed.
When was the last time you ever heard of a 10-speed? I mean,
well, when I was in high school.
Yeah.
Well, I was 40 years ago. No.
Yes, it was. It was 40 years ago. It was 40 years ago. 41 years ago.
So it's 10-speed transmission, huh?
Yeah, and what they say is
that's actually cool.
It's going to go in the ZL1.
Right.
L-E-I-L-E. And what's going to be interesting is they say already that it's going to be faster on the strip.
Well, 10 speeds.
Faster than what?
The manual.
Than the other one.
The manual.
Oh, well, the manual. Sure. Sure.
Right. But, I like shifting gears. So if I'm going to pay that much money for a car and I'm going to go for the shifter.
Does it have paddles? Because if it does, you can shift it yourself if you want to.
Yeah. But they just sneak peeked it and said it's a 10 speed coming out.
That's fun.
And, the supercars have all that. So when you hit the mechanism, you just hit it and then you just launch, you can beat pretty much anything
launch
out
control.
There.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's amazing. And then the Chevy Silverado will debut with a new truck, but it's going to be a Lego version in the Lego 2 movie. The Silverado Chevy pickup.
Okay.
So in the Lego movie.
Yes.
They're making a Chevy Silverado.
They're bringing out a new Silverado. Is it made of Legos or is it just the Lego package trim
and
stuff?
They didn't give too much on there, but they said it's going to be featured in the new Lego 2 movie.
Doesn't withstand accidents.
Well, there's a trivia question.
Recall's coming soon.
Yeah, there's a trivia question we could build. We'll have to talk to Jerry Heasley coming up. He does barn finds. Maybe they found some Legos in a barn and we can see what's going on with that. He's coming up next. Stick with us. This is Horsepower, Chrome, and
Rust. Did you hear the news? Cartoons Magazine is back. Yep, those car crazy comics from the past have returned in an all-new Cartoons Magazine, featuring some of your favorite artists along with a whole slew of new ones, all working together to bring you an entire magazine filled with one laugh-out-loud auto-related story after another. Bi-monthly issues are available directly through the Cartoons Magazine website at cartoonsmag.com.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Okay, forest animals, kids are coming to the forest, and it's up to us to make their visit a good one. Sparrow, have you practiced the most popular bird songs for the year?
Of course.
Catchy. I like it. River, how's the temperature?
It's a refreshing 52 degrees, man.
I love it. Turtle.
He's not here yet, man.
He's late every morning. Okay, squirrel.
The forest has been preparing just for you. To learn more about cool things to do in the forest, visit discovertheforest.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
This is Robert Durf with the Porsche Club of America Driver Skills Program. Thank you for listening to Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust. And just want to remind everybody that it's no fun unless it smells a little bit like burnt oil and burnt rubber.
Hey, car enthusiast, are you in need of a restoration and fabrication shop that turns old steel into rolling works of art? Then look no further than E-Company Customs Hot Rods and Restorations. E-Company Customs, that's Customs with a K, is the Northwest's fastest growing restoration and fabrication shop, providing frame-off restoration, custom mods, upholstery, rust repair, hand-done metalwork, motor work, body and paint, and a whole lot more. To book an appointment, visit them at ecompanycustoms.com or stop by their shop at 15002 Suite A, Highway 99, Linwood, Washington. E-Company Customs, providing a stress-free experience to both new and returning customers.
My mind's out of gear, and my heart's in overdrive. I've everything to fear. I ain't never been more alive.
Welcome back to the second segment of Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust. It's time for the windshield view, and this week we are on a phone call interview with the guy that has found a lot of hidden treasure in some barns and sheds all over America, Jerry Heasley. Welcome, Jerry.
Great to be here.
Yeah, glad to have you. So I have one question first and foremost that is important to us, and I'll tell you why in a second. When you go out and when you find stuff in barns and stuff, I'm assuming that a lot of them are covered with dust and dirt and, you know, various things because they've been in there for a long time. Am I right?
That's correct.
So what do you do with the dust? When you take the dust,
leave it there. I mean,
do you? See, we're gonna ask you if you can box some of it up and ship it to us, because we give away barn find dust as the prize for our trivia contest, and that way people can take it and sprinkle it on their cars, and then they can increase the value of it because they're covered with barn dust.
Well, you should have been with me in New Mexico last week. We were in some ruins.
Yeah.
Some 150-year-old ruins, and there was a car that had been parked over 100 years. It was a 1912 Mitchell.
Nice.
And I'm doing a YouTube movie on that right now. And
oh, that's great.
We had to get special permission to go back there. I mean, it was like an Indiana Jones adventure.
Cool.
In fact, when we were going, we were walking across a beam that would drop a floor, you know, in this old building. And one of the guys with me, he really only spoke Spanish, but he yelled at me, he says, "You're Indiana Jones." And I go, "You're Indiana Jones." And we go down and we get to this car. And, I mean, somebody asked me, "Oh, what color was it?" I said, "Well, dust, you know." And the dust is so bad that you almost need it. I did carry a mask with me.
Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure it's horrible. Well, you can be Indiana Jones. I just don't want to be the guy that the Rock chases. That's all I mean.
Well, they dislodge this car, and it starts rolling after them. Oh, I could just see that. Well,
this is real, because I get accused all the time that people tell me, "Oh, well, this isn't real." I even had a guy on my blog, on the comments section, say that that we had put dust on that car, and it was
on purpose.
I said, "Yeah, right." Yeah, but I do know TV shows that do that.
Oh, sure.
They spray dust on cars. In fact, they told me that I could tell you all kinds of things that TV shows get into. But my channel is all real. I've done this since 1991, monthly in 3 and 4 magazines. So I've done about 1,000 barn finds.
Oh, that's a ton.
Well, and he,
you know, people wonder, how do you find so many of these? I said, look, I have hundreds of thousands of readers, and that's how I find the cars. No one person could find all these cars.
Oh, sure. I'm sure you get tips and requests even to go out and take a look at some stuff.
No, they don't. You know, you have to realize, these barn finds, when they're a treasure, they're going to keep it secret. So lots of times they just follow my directions on how to take the pictures and when to take the pictures to save the scene, the kind of not to disturb the archaeology there, and then send it to me. And I had a guy with found a 65 Shelby, okay, sitting on the desert floor for many years. I mean, it sunk down into the dirt. And when he emailed me, he said, I followed all your directions precisely. So we had a fantastic rare find. Now, sometimes I get to go along on the adventure. Sometimes I find them on my own. But, you know, this is not all I do. You know, I started out just as an auto journalist back in the early 80s.
Well, and that's what I wanted to do, was kind of back up and talk about that. How did you get into being an auto journalist?
Well, you know, I have a degree in math and physics, and I have a minor in English, but I was always wanted to be a writer full time. And so I started writing for general interest magazines in the late 70s when I was in college, after college. And then I got into the special interest of cars, you know, sort of a separate segment, because then I had more of a market. There's too much competition in the freelance field in general interest magazines. It's really hard to get anything you know, repeatable going all those through the months, and I get a paycheck every month. But I was really lucky, because in the early 80s the magazines were exploding in the special interest field. I mean, we used to just have Hot Rod and Car Craft and and, you know, general interest magazines that, and then, you know, now if in the early 80s if you followed just Mustangs or Camaros or muscle cars, there were, or Corvettes, there were separate magazines. And, and then they kept exploding. And at the height, I was writing 350 magazine features a year and making pretty good money at it.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
You know, and it continued up until, I don't know, 6 or 7 years ago, when the magazines reversed their track of exploding and they started imploding on themselves. And print has not died, but it's not what it used to be.
Well, everything's on the net now, which I'm sure is part of the reason why you went to YouTube.
That's part of the reason I went to YouTube, yes. And when I finally made the switch, and of course I still do print, but when I write those columns. But YouTube, I do the whole thing, because I had tried to get TV shows for a number of years, and I thought I got close a few times, but most of the time there's somebody who steps in there and who's in TV, and so they use them, even though they're not the people that are finding the cars or have the experience. I mean,
right.
I work for Speed Vision. I freelanced a lot for Speed Vision. Back in 2000, I covered the Ferrari Challenge. I've done just about everything you think of in automotive journalism. And one of the principals at Speed Vision, when they sold the Speed Vision, they bought into the Velocity Channel, and I'd ask this person I knew, I won't name him, but I said, hey, you know, I've done these barn finds for years. It's called Rare Finds, and I've done more of these than anybody, and I was the first one in the space. And he said, yeah, that's a good idea for a show, but why do we need you? We can do it ourselves. And I said, well, that's true.
Yes.
But can they do it as well as me? Do they have the contacts? I don't think so.
Yeah.
So I just started doing it myself on YouTube.
Well, you know, one thing that my experience is in both television and radio broadcasting, and I got a lot of background in that, is that, you know, once something sort of catches on, then, like you say, the so-called vultures kind of jump in. They want to either do it or duplicate it, and the whole process gets kind of top-heavy. I mean, something you could do with one or two people, they want to do with 12 people, and it takes away a lot of times from the purity of what you're doing.
Right, right. So, you know, there's so much you can do today that's like a TV show, And with my version of the TV show, there's nothing fake here. And I think it's better. I mean, I'm real critical of my own stuff, but I like my show better than what I see on TV. I mean, if I could plug it, you know, you go to YouTube and you have to put in my name, Jerry Heasley, which is kind of hard to spell, you know, the H-E-A-S-L-E-Y, but I've got, you know, in October I had 1.5 million views. Now, I think that that's on, you know, a number of videos. I try to put one up every week of a barn find. We were in Mexico last week. The week before that, we were out in the desert, and we found some cars. Right now, we're about to go and do a show. I'm going to do a show on finding 4 or 5 Indian Chief motorcycles from the 40s.
Oh, nice!
They're in this old shed. And it's gonna be really, really dusty. I've got a few pictures of them.
Well, that's great.
We just got a lot of things lined up.
Well, don't feel bad about plugging your stuff, because that's actually part of the reason why we're here. We want to plug your stuff. In fact, we're going to make sure that we add the links to your YouTube channel and, you know, websites and Facebook pages, whatever you got, along with when we publish the show. So we're going to send people your way as much as we can. And we think that's great.
And we are about ready to come to our break. So before come up to the break, I just want to say, go to Jerry Heasley on YouTube. Check it out. He's got some great stuff. I was watching him today doing something about an old Nova 2 drag car. So lots of stuff there.
Cool. Well, stay right here for more Jerry and another story from the old car nut book. And we're back in the Horsepower Chrome and Rust.
You're into cars, you love a good time, and you'd rather build it than buy it. You might just love the Rat Bastards. The Rat Bastards Car Club is a family-oriented, non-profit organization. We believe in 1969 and older, in the rough is enough, real steel and iron, old-school, traditional hot rods and rat rods. We get together, have fun, help each other, and love to drive them. Your build is our build, because that's the way car clubs are supposed to be. The Rat Bastards are a new class of old school, and our signature event is the Infestation every July. Find us at a cruise in all over the Puget Sound and on the Rat Bastards Car Club page on Facebook.
More Horsepower Chrome and Rust after these messages.
Attention men under the age of 35. You know what really impresses the ladies? When a guy has a few drinks and later gets pulled over for buzz driving. That could cost you around $10,000 in fines, legal fees, and increased insurance rates. Oh, I know. You drive more carefully when you're buzzed. You've proven that hundreds of times. A woman admires that kind of confidence. And you've practiced how to speak if a cop does pull you over. Slowly, clearly, and politely, like, "Good evening, officer." And what woman doesn't find it adorable that you call it buzzed even though the law calls it drunk? You could kiss $10,000 goodbye, along with any chance of having a girlfriend. Buzzed, busted, and broke. Because buzz driving is drunk driving.
Hello, this is Zach with Cascade Campers. You're listening to Horsepower Chrome and Rust.
I'm jumping in with my clothes on!
Most party fouls are pretty dumb, but if you decide to drink and drive underage, you could lose your license and your freedom. Learn more at ultimatepartyfoul.org. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration.
Listen and imagine. It takes 5 seconds to send a text, and for those 5 seconds, you're driving blind.
Life is worth more than a text.
Stay alive. Don't text and drive.
Back in Vehicle City.
Yes, you are back in Vehicle City with this week's guest, Jerry Heasley, who is a long-term columnist for various auto-related magazines, and then he started himself a really cool YouTube channel under his name, Jerry Heasley, and he was probably one of the originators of dealing with barn finds and old cars with dust and old garage finds and stuff, lost collections. He had a column, and I think it's still going, called Rare Finds. And Jerry, I wanted to kind of step back a little bit. You have been writing for years and years and years. And you started out in the general magazines, and then you took your love for cars and you got parlayed that into being a well-known columnist with various magazines. Why don't you talk to us about two or three of maybe some of the really, really intriguing stories that you've come across in your days that just stand out from maybe the rest of them that you still are fresh in your mind. It's just like, wow, that was quite an amazing story. So tell us a few of those adventures and stuff.
Well, I'll tell you with the very first one. I was at a Cobra show in Dallas, a Cobra and Shelby show, and in comes on a trailer 5R003, which is the first Shelby race car ever built. It was raced by Jerry Titus, so it was a really famous car. Now, you're talking about 1980, or thereabouts.
Mm-hmm.
And so I called my editor at Mustang Monthly. I said, look, we have to do a story on this. And he said, oh, yeah, that'd be great to do a story, you know. And he said, whenever they get it restored. I said, no, right now. And I explained it was just a hull. There was no engine in it. But this was the first Shelby race car. And he said, oh, no, they just wouldn't run it because they wanted to run restored cars. So it took me a while to convince editors that we needed to run. I wanted to call my column Barn Finds. Jerry Pitt finally bid on it and said, gave me a column. Jerry was at Hot Rod, and he got me the column in Hot Rod's Mustang book first. But that was a very exciting find. Never got to really do a story on it till later because they didn't understand it. You know, that's the problem. They just did not understand it. I was early in the space. So what I did was I called my friend Pete Pister at Pop Your Hot Rod. I work for Argus Publications. I work for all the major publishers, you know, CSK, Dobbs, mm-hmm. Hot Rod, Peterson, everybody. And I would go to El Paso, and what I did was I went to MSD, and I did how-to articles for Pete Pister at Pop Your Hot Rodding. That's Argus Publishers. And so I told Pete, I said, look, while I'm down there this time, we want to go over to Mexico, because there's a Boss 429 Mustang that a lady is using as a doghouse in her backyard. And I said, this is a great story.
I love this.
And he's like, what? I mean, he didn't get it either. And I said, Pete, this is going to be great. And I said, we've got all kinds of muscle cars in Juarez that we can do. So just because I did lots of stuff for him, he had been the editor of Fabulous Mustang, so I'd done hundreds of articles for him. Then he became editor of Pop Your Hot Rod, he moved up. And so he said, well, go ahead and do it. He didn't really want it, but he was going to let me do it. And when it came out with all the different barn finds from El Paso, including a yard full of Shelby Mustangs, I mean, it was like a bomb exploded. He called me up. He said, you won't believe it. He said, everybody's talking about this. It's the biggest thing in the magazine. That's
so people love that stuff.
Yeah, and so I've done so many of these because how do I get them? People wonder, how do I get these things? It's because when I started the column that I get readers. I put in the column, look, if you find a car, and I have a column in Mustang Monthly, I have a column in Muscle Car Review and Vet Magazine, okay? And you know, as a journalist, see, my background is I wrote for general interest magazines. I was one of the top writers at the National Enquirer, for example, for a couple of years back when it was a good magazine. I wouldn't work for it now. But we had to have strong leads to Enquirer. I mean, they would fly me into Lantana, Florida, and then they would have me write stories. And I remember I was writing a story. They really like shark attacks. So I'm writing a story on a shark attack. And my editor, you always write it, and then you give it to your editor, and he gives you pointers. He said, you know, we're competing against TV, and we have to have strong leads. We have to really have a lead that will grab people and make them read it, which is what I do with my stories all my career. If you read my rare finds, it'll draw you in. I have a lot of people say in my books, you know, I couldn't put that down. Well, that's what I'm after.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I'm after
sure.
with my movies that I put together from these videos. That's what I'm doing. So he told me this shark attack story. I give it to him, and he says, no, that's not a strong enough lead. And so he came up with a lead. The lead was, I thought I was going to die, you know. And I said, well, the guy didn't really say that. I thought, well, it's close enough, and so.
He may have thought it.
And it. But I learned so much from the National Choir, even though I was good when I started working for them, because you wouldn't sell anything.
Right.
But I did tons of articles for them, and that helped me with my career in auto journalism, because I applied that. That's the reason I wanted to do these rare finds, which I wanted to call barn finds, but they said, well, it may not be in a barn, so they wouldn't let me call it barn finds. That was their mistake.
Yeah. Now the term's gone into the vernacular, so everybody knows what you mean when you say it, whether it's a barn or not.
Right. Barn find is a general term.
Sure.
To describe, cars found out. They're kind of discoveries. I like mine to be discoveries. So many people try to copy me, and here's what they do. They go to a guy who has a collection. He knows what they are. He just hasn't kept them very well. And so they go in and they say, this is a barn find. I'm going, well, if that intrigues you, go ahead. But that doesn't intrigue me to go to a guy who has a collection of cars.
Right.
Now, if I could tell you all sorts of stories, like one of the greatest, some of the greatest rare finds, like Orbitron. Now, that was Big Daddy Ed Ross custom car. They've been lost for 30 to 40 years.
Yeah, that's right.
And my friend Michael Lightborn found it on the street. He saw it. I said, you had to be very perceptive to recognize that car. And that was a tremendous barn find. That car's worth millions of dollars now that it's restored. He bought it, so it had the original engine in it. It was missing a lot of parts, but it looks like a little bubble.
Oh, yeah.
It has multicolored lights in the front.
Oh, I remember it real well.
And
used to drool at it in the magazines.
We found so many cars. I mean, people get a hold of me. If you look at my column in any of the magazines, email me, or if you look at the YouTube channel, and I always tell people now, I said, look, let me go along, because I can use a small camera. We get permission, and we go in, and we do it. We've had just a great time with it, And once in a while, we'll buy a car. We'll buy anything. I mean, we have some stuff you would not believe that we have found. I mean, we have found a 289 Cobra and a GT40, for example, that we're trying to buy. That are just in a shed.
Yeah,
it's unbelievable that it would be there. We have so many things. We're looking at a Trans Am Mustang. For years, we've been trying to get some of these things. Take years,
right?
To get. We found movie cars. We know where they are. I've done video. I haven't been able to publish it yet because we're still trying to get the car.
Yeah, because if you published it, you could nix the deal. You could get the cat could come out of the bag and you could lose it.
Hey, Jerry, I got a question for you. Speaking of rare cars and movie cars, does anybody have or have you had anything to do with, do you know where the car from the movie Vanishing Point is? You know the one I'm talking about? That Dodge?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Is that thing still in existence?
Well, it might be. I haven't heard anything about that. I've got some other movie cars and some celebrity cars we're looking at, but I can't even mention them because it would be it would set off an alarm and
okay. So how about the one in Thunderbolt and Lightfoot, the Cadillac?
Yeah. Well, I don't know. Some of those cars are not worth as much as you think.
Oh no! I was just kidding. Go ahead.
I just think that everybody's got a movie, or maybe two or three, that sort of grabbed you for some reason. And Vanishing Point wasn't a huge, huge movie, but for some reason or another, it the car and the whole process just grabbed me. And,
oh yeah,
I've
me
always
too.
Thought, God, it'd be fun to have that car or a car just like
or
it,
or two lane blacktop.
Yeah, two lane blacktop was another one, but for me it was Vanishing Point.
Dirty,
I mean, everybody's
Dirty Mary
hits.
Or Dirty Larry or Crazy Mary, Dirty Mary, Crazy Larry. Yeah. That was my favorite.
Everybody hits the bullet car and all of that, but for me it was Vanishing Point. I don't know.
So go ahead, Jerry. You were saying.
Well, we did the first Dukes Hazzard car, the 01 car. I did a little story on that. I was there in 2000 when they did the jump. They did the jump again when they ruined one of those Chargers. And and I remember I had two cameras, and my editor, we wanted to cover for Mopar Action. That was Cliff Bromer, one of my favorite editors, and he's there. And he sent me there, and he said, you got to get that cover. Well, the car goes up in the air, and you got to get a good action shot of it. I had digital working for me. I think it was in the early 2000s. I had digital, and I had a film camera.
Yep.
So I couldn't shoot both cameras at once, and I was checking with the guys around if anybody had any photo experience, if they could shoot one camera while I shot the other one. So I gave this guy the digital camera. He said he shot for the Army, and oh, he was real good at it and everything. He missed every shot. I mean, they're all blurred.
Geez.
And so I looked at those. I thought, oh, man, these are all blurred. Okay, I hope my slides came out. So I had to wait a day while they got processed and on pins and needles, but it came out. I had a sharp one. In fact, I had it just as it hit the nose. If anybody had that cover of Mopar Muscle, Mopar Action, you'll see that shot. It's just an amazing shot.
Wow.
And my editor went nuts over it. And that, thankfully, I got my expenses paid. If I had missed that shot, he wouldn't pay me nothing. You know, so just been. But automotive journalism, freelancing, that's a really tough little deal, let me tell you, because so often you pay your own way and you have to come back. I mean, I go on trips. I would come back with 15 magazine articles.
Well, yeah, and especially when you're freelancing like that, you're only as good as whatever sentence you wrote last. You know, there's no guarantee of anything coming up.
No royalties. It's not like you're being on a TV show and you get those endless royalties every time they played it in syndication. Articles are there. You're paid and it's done. It's over with. Whereas the nice thing about with your YouTube channel is it grows. People continue to look at your older material. They watch your new material and you get to monetize it. And you are the one who gets to be paid. And it just continually snowballs and grows. And I think you hope. Well,
that's the goal.
Yeah,
that's the
goal. And Jerry, when did you launch your Jerry Heasley channel, by the way?
Well, it was about October of 2016.
Very good.
2017. Yeah, around there I started. Actually, I did a favor for somebody, did a video on basketball. I love basketball. I played basketball for years and even played semi-pro for a while, you know. But I did this favor and I thought, oh, I could do – honey, I've been wanting to do this, so – then I kind of learned how to the technique and to do iMovie and all that.
Sure.
And it's really fun when you get it done. I mean, I think I have some great stuff on there, but I'm biased. But I get into the human interest side. I want to interview people. I want to find out about the car and everything. And, you know, my latest one is barn finds of a 98-year-old World War II veteran. So I saw his barn finds back there. They were hidden, and then we talked about his World War II experience, and that, and so it kind of bleeds over into other areas, and people are really loving that.
Oh,
it's
yeah, sure.
100,000 views in the first 6 days. So
well, that's a good series of hooks there too. That'd be a great storyline.
And you know what I like about what you're doing is you're out there, you throw humor into it. I was watching the Nova 2, and you were like, look out for the dog, and well, I guess the dog's not so bad after all, and so you throw your southern humor in there, and then you're out there just talking, and the guy's just you're wandering in this old shed full of tires. And Shane, you've probably spent a lot of time in these kind of places. And he's just wandering around, and everything's just like hacked up, and it's just sitting there. And well, this used to be the dragster of this or dragster of that, and
that's a weekly occurrence.
Well, these people with these old cars. These people that collect these old cars, they're worth lots of money. They don't sell them. They're unusual. I mean, they usually collect other things. We had a guy, we did a 23T bucket that the guy, it had fancy paint and pan striping on it. We found out that the owner, that it was actually painted by Von Dutch. He didn't even know this guy. Von Dutch came wandering through town and stayed with him for a couple weeks, painted his car. He was in his little magic bus and everything.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I got to talking to the guy. He was in on that Atosha treasure ship find. I mean, he went to Florida and tried to buy real estate, and it was too high. He was around Key West, and he met this guy in a bar. They're both drinking beer, both got drunk, and he said this guy's name was Mel, and that's the guy that found the Atosha. He was hunting the ship. He ran out of money, and so my friend gave him a check for $80,000 in the bar.
Wow.
He got
4%
of the $400 million later.
That's a story.
But
that's actually a good reason to have you back.
Jerry, we're running up against our clock, so I just want to say thanks for being on. There's our music. And go to Jerry Heasley channel on YouTube. You can find out more about him there. And folks, we'll be right back with more of the show and a really cool story from the Old Car Nut book.
Listen, as a hiring manager, I've got to tell you, the best job candidate isn't always the typical candidate. Sometimes they're a grad of life.
Meet the grads of life, young adults of unique determination and experience, an ideal fit for your company in an entry-level position, internship, or mentorship. They might not have every qualification you typically look for, but they're exactly who your company needs.
Sometimes the best candidates aren't the ones you're used to.
Go to gradsoflife.org to learn how to find, cultivate, and train this great pool of untapped talent.
Stick around. We'll be back after these words.
Hey, car enthusiast. Are you in need of a restoration and fabrication shop that turns old steel into rolling works of art? Then look no further than E-Company Customs Hot Rods and Restorations. E-Company Customs, that's Customs with a K, is the Northwest's fastest growing restoration and fabrication shop, providing frame-off restoration, custom mods, upholstery, rust repair, hand-done metalwork, motorwork, body and paint, and a whole lot more. To book an appointment, visit them at ecompanycustoms.com or stop by their shop at 15002 Suite A, Highway 99, Linwood, Washington. E-Company Customs, providing a stress-free experience to both new and returning customers.
This is Cody with Bow Wow Air-Cooled. You're listening to Horsepower Chrome and Rust.
I adopted Bento in 2010 from a shelter. A lot of people know him as Keyboard Cat.
That's just one adoption story that started at a shelter. Visit theshelterpetproject.org to find a pet near you.
When it comes to saving money, don't act like a baby.
Goo goo gaga.
Be the boss and make a budget.
I'm the boss, baby.
You're the boss of me.
I am the boss of you.
Are not.
M2.
Are not.
M2.
Need a little help?
Aren't you going to do any work?
I'm very busy delegating.
Create a personalized savings plan.
We can share.
You obviously didn't go to business school.
And get other tools and tips at feedthepig.org.
Welcome to the fourth segment of the show. This is Cars Confidential, where we share all kinds of hot rod stories. And this week, we have Brady.
Oh, yeah.
He's back.
He's back.
He's going to be telling us a story.
He's back and he's front.
We he's have, back and front.
That's right.
And top and bottom.
That's right. It's a four-way stop. Yeah, actually, I got a good one. This is going to be kind of a fun one. This is one from the Old Car Nut book, the first one. It is the one, Stories from Old Car Nuts from Across America. And this particular one is called Dad, I've Got to Have a Car. It was written by Hank Callahan originally, or Callaham, I'm going to say, because I want to be correct. All right. So, I was a gearhead. Sounds like the title of a teen movie. I was a teenage gearhead. From the time I was about 11 years old, during junior high school, I'd stare out the windows, watching all the guys cruising by in their hot rods with the loud pipes and pretty girls sitting beside them. So far, I haven't heard anything wrong with this. This is fine. That was who I wanted to be. And I never lost that dream. And going through high school, I was always ready to buy my first car. I'd put a down payment on a car and bring it home, and I'd have my dad take a look at it to see if I could actually buy it. And he'd say, nope, no, it's got too much horsepower, or didn't have any horsepower, or something like that. There was always a good reason in his mind. He did this every time. I kept trying, though. Once, I found a two-tone green 57 Chevy with a 409 and brought it home. It was a cool car, and I wanted it really bad. He said, absolutely not. Take it back. Oh, I expected no less, but still I kept trying. Then there was a 49 Merc that was in primer, ran real good, and I took it home to see if he'd accept that. Same deal. I'd had to take it back. Now, at this point, he just laid down the law and said, no, you're not going to have a car until you get out of high school. It's the sentence of death. For most kids.
For high school kids.
Yeah. Oh, I said, man. Dad, I've got to have a car. I got football practice and this and that kind of practice. And besides, Mom doesn't drive, so I got to be able to go and do things. Now, in reality, I wasn't completely without a car because my mother didn't drive, but still, she needed to go places, so I was delegated quite often to be her driver. Now, that meant that on Saturdays, we would drop Dad off at his shoe store, And I would take Mom to see her brothers and sisters. Now, while she was visiting, I'd pretty much have free run of town in my dad's 57 Chevy. It was a 210, a four-door, with the 283 V8, and the three-speed transmission with the overdrive. Now, I wasn't too concerned with the overdrive part, but I did enjoy the power that it produced in first and second gear. I guess I wasn't any different from any other teenager in that respect, and I raced it every chance I could get. I kept bugging him about being able to buy my own car, however, and there was never ever met with positive results. Finally, he says to me, "You can buy your uncle's car 2 months before you graduate." Well, all right. So it was a 47 Chrysler Windsor with four-door, no less, with fluid drive. Remember Chrysler fluid drive?
Oh, yes.
That was Chrysler's version of the slush box.
Yes.
It was a huge executive model car that most guys my age considered a boat. I said to him, "You really know how to build a guy's ego." But I dealt with it as best I could. At least I had something to drive. Once I graduated from high school, he actually sold me his 57 Chevy, and that surprised me because he knew how I'd been running the wheels off it every time I got the chance. One night at dinner...
That's why he sold it to him.
Yeah, well, yeah. You've ruined it now, so you might as well have it. How come the transmission doesn't shift anymore? One night at dinner, months earlier, the subject of tires came up with his casual comment of, "I can't figure out why the back tires on the car are wearing out before the fronts. It's the fronts that get the most wear." I choked a bit and said, "You mean the fronts are supposed to wear out first?" He looked straight at me and firmly said, "Yes, sir, they are." Dinner got real quiet for a while until he calmly interjected, "I think I know the solution to the tire issue." And then he looked at me and his voice a few decibels higher yelled, "You're buying the new set of tires." Well, I learned about cars and tires pretty quickly. In the remaining time that I borrowed the car, I quit racing it. Well, sort of. At least I quit tearing up the tires. Today, I'm retired. I'm playing with my 62 Impala, a beautiful car that I love to show and drive any chance I get. But it all started with me really needing to have a car. You know, when I was a kid, I think we all have a story about our first car.
Yes.
And when I was a kid, my parents had a variety of cars, but the one I learned how to drive on and the one that I had was my first car was a 63 Impala with a 283 and a Power Glide transmission. So I'm real familiar with that powertrain and that whole thing. And I drove that thing mostly in, you know, through high school, although it wasn't my car. It was my mom's car.
Yeah.
My dad
yeah.
had another one. I was a motorcycle guy, and I commuted back and forth 14 miles one way on my Harley. And in the rain, that wasn't as much fun as it sounds like.
No.
So that's when I got to drive the Chevy. But, man, you know, those conversations at the dinner table were real familiar. You know?
Oh, yes. And,
really? So the transmission's a little loose. No, I think it's fine. And then I'd run out and, you know, tighten down the bands and back them off 2 1/4 turns. And
yeah, you know, I had my dad come into the dinner table. So a chunk of rubber about 2 inches thick.
Ooh.
Down on the table. And then said, "You're buying the next set of tires."
Yeah.
Well, and that was on our 67 Camaro.
Did you try real hard? Go, where'd that come from?
No, I didn't even. I knew where
busted.
It came from.
Jeez. Well, that's better than me coming home and with the side of the car creased because I just turned into a fence post, which I did all too much.
Not so good.
And I got really good with the Bondo. And
you turned into a fence post?
Pulling out the dents with a little... I turned into a fence post.
That's what I said.
Yes.
Those are the exact words that came out of my
looking
mouth.
Looking left and turning to the right, because a lot of the parties I'd go to were out in the country. And lots of fence posts out there.
Oh, yeah.
And I'd be looking left and turning right and, oh, crap, there's another one. And so I ended up buying that thing because I just felt guilty.
Not to mention buying a new fence post. Yeah, well, yeah.
Yeah. But that's where I learned how to do body work on a car. Working, pulling dents and all that good stuff.
That'd work.
But
easier to learn how to miss fins.
Well, as usual, you know, these stories all come from the old Car Nut books, and it's a pleasure to do them. David Dickinson has been real nice to let us read these stories. Of course, he gets a plug every time we do it.
Yes, he does.
I keep getting with him to try to. He's got three of the books in the series, and everybody knows you can get them on Amazon or oldcarnutbook.com. But he's got enough material for book four, and I keep bugging him.
He's got that teaser on the.
I know.
Sure, too.
I keep bugging him.
Covers
like,
already done.
Get the thing done. Give me. You know, come on. Let's get those racing stories.
Well, I think he's just enjoying hanging hanging out and not doing a lot and being too responsible these
days. I'm going to tell him that if he wants to get it done, give me the stuff and I'll publish it under his name just to get it out there.
Right.
Maybe.
But you'll just get half the royalties.
No,
for
I don't want
work.
Any of the royalties. Yeah. I just want to see the book.
Well, you know, you were talking about Harley, and I did come across a very interesting article that won't be anything new to you because you keep track of this stuff. But Harley-Davidson expects to ship out 222,000 motorcycles globally in 2019,
the
lowest number since 2010.
Yep.
Global retail sales for 2018 fell 6.1% and 10% here in the United States. And so, again, they are suffering the fact of a very expensive machine. It's a toy, but you know what? 222,000 toys is not bad.
No, except it really is a low number. I mean, that, you know, the high point
was like 300 and something.
Yeah, the high point, they were almost doubling that.
Yes.
But the thing is, you know, as you pointed out, they're expensive. They're not the best performing motorcycles out there. They just got a lot of cachet and a lot of history, and there's nothing wrong with that at all. But they're trying to diversify, make some smaller models that are a little bit more affordable, and they're going into the electrics. You know, we know that's coming.
Yep.
But, you know, it's just the market changes, and the fact is nobody needs, I hate to say this, nobody needs a motorcycle.
No.
You want one, but it's not your primary vehicle
in
most parts of this country. I mean, it just isn't. So it's discretionary income or disposable income, and you know.
500 horsepower muscle cars instead.
Yeah, that's right. See, now that's exactly it. Everybody needs a 500 horsepower muscle car.
Well, you know,
nobody needs a motor.
Exactly.
My son Noah would like to have one of those.
Yeah.
68 fastback, I think he wants with a full, you know,
So
he's got his sights set on something like that. I'm like, well, just set aside your money and maybe in some day he's going to try to sell his Crown Vic though. He's got to put that in the Auto Trader and
that'll buy him the emblems.
What's that?
That's right.
Yeah. That'll buy him the emblems.
Yes,
and the manual. He could get the manual too. Probably toss in the manual.
Manual and the emblems. Yeah.
Well, with YouTube, you don't even need manuals anymore.
Well, that's true.
So stick with us. We'll be right back with more of the show in a really fun trivia question coming up next.
You're into cars, you love a good time, and you'd rather build it than buy it. You might just love the Rat Bastards. The Rat Bastards Car Club is a family-oriented, non-profit organization. We believe in 1969 and older, in the rough is enough, real steel and iron, old-school, traditional hot rods and rat rods. We get together, have fun, help each other, and love to drive them. Your build is our build, because that's the way car clubs are supposed to be. The Rat Bastards are a new class of old school, and our signature event is the Infestation every July. Find us at a cruise in all over the Puget Sound and on the Rat Bastards Car Club page on Facebook.
Hang on till right after these messages.
Hey y'all, I'm Blake Shelton. I love that country music connects people all over this great nation, but unfortunately so does something else, childhood hunger. 15 million children struggle with hunger in America. That's why the Feeding America nationwide network of food banks works to rescue our surplus food to help provide billions of meals to families in need across the country. Join the fight against hunger at feedingamerica.org. Together, we can solve hunger. Together, we're Feeding America.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
In 95, I helped tow your trailer. And in 09, it was sparks from me, your chains, dragging behind your truck that accidentally started a wildfire.
Spark a change, not a wildfire. Visit SmokeyBear.com, brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council.
This is Donnie Smith. You've been listening to Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust. Enjoy yourself.
Did you hear the news? Cartoons Magazine is back. Yep, those car-crazy comics from the past have returned in an all-new Cartoons Magazine, featuring some of your favorite artists along with a whole slew of new ones, all working together to bring you an entire magazine filled with one laugh-out-loud auto-related story after another. Bi-monthly issues are available directly through the Cartoons Magazine website at cartoonsmag.com.
Help us if you can. You're an El Camino. El Camino man. Only
I can't help it. I love this song. Welcome back. It is the fifth and final segment of the show. Every time I say fifth, we should have a cork popped someplace.
Yeah.
This is.
Where's that sound effect?
Yeah.
There you go.
This is Around the Wheel. Sure it is. This is where we talk about events and rallies and all the cool stuff that has to do with people getting together with their cars. And by the way, there's a new cruise in that is happening in the Puget Sound area, specifically in the north end of Seattle, south end of Everett, Snohomish County area. Sunday at 12:30 every week at the Dairy Queen on the Bothell Everett Highway. Yeah. There's a huge cruise in that's going on. They had 129 cars last week.
Wow.
And it's and it's good for winter. Still, yeah, still crummy weather. But everybody showed up, and it's going to be a regular weekly thing for the foreseeable future.
Excellent.
Yeah, they finally, the guys at the Dairy Queen and the mall where that thing is.
They agreed to do it.
Yeah, they said, yeah, bring them, you know.
And yeah, it's business for them.
Sure, well, you know, I don't know why that, you know, so many food places get a little snippy about that because they don't own the parking lot. You know, maybe
right,
it's part of a strip
right.
mall and they want the parking
for
other
customers.
Yeah, but probably
a third of those people are going to eat food.
Yeah,
well, even yeah, I mean, everybody comes at noon, you're going there for lunch.
Yeah.
You know, why wouldn't you? Anyway, just a toss out.
Yeah.
So we have a trivia question. Last week, if you were with us, we had a terrific trivia question that was, it was a trick question. It was, what was the U.S. production car that had the quickest 0 to 60 time? And And it wasn't the fastest, not top speed, but the quickest, how many seconds. And we came up with the 1962 Chevy Impala SS409 did it in 4.0. Now, that was the quickest for a long, long time. I mean, a stock car. Now.
Right.
Okay. Until 2 years ago, which tells you how old this question is, when the Hellcat came out and it blew it down to about 3.6.
Wow.
And it's a production car. Now, the Demon will go faster, of course, but, you know, that's
not
doesn't
a count.
Right. It's, but, yeah, so that record stood for a long, long time. Nothing was quicker, 0 to 60.
Wow.
Now, everybody knows who pays any attention. Zero to 60 is cool, but it's the 40 to 80 roll-on that really makes a difference. I mean, that's where the rubber meets the road, literally.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
You can do 4 seconds all day with some of the new cars. But it's kind of a cool one. We did get a winner. Got an email from a guy named Sid Gormley, and he is the actual winner. I didn't ask him how he came up with the information. Maybe he owns a 62 409. I don't know. But
Sid, but not a 409.
Yeah. So Sid will win our chrome-plated, gold-leafed Jerry Heasley signature bucket of barn find dust for this week's question. And I got a new one for next week that is going to be good.
Okay. Let's
All right.
hear it.
This is, you got to have to be pretty literate for this one. What is the only car that was simultaneously on the cover of both Time and Newsweek? Same week. The only car. That's a good one. So you can send us your answer on Facebook. You can email us at contactus@horsepowerchromeandrust.com. And you, too, could win the coveted bucket of genuine HC&R barn find dust, of which there is a picture on our website of Shane holding said bucket in his best used car salesman pose.
And it sits on our shelf right over here.
It does. It's right next to us. I would take a picture, except you can't see it. I'll hold the microphone over there real close. And
yes,
you can
we'll have
visualize.
To take a picture.
We need smell-o-vision. We could open it up and smell the dust in there.
Smell the dust.
Smell like.
Maybe Jerry will send us some real.
I hope that he does.
Guano droppings from the cave.
Oh, let's not do that. No, I don't think so. That stuff.
More weeks till the Sacramento Autorama, guys.
That's right.
Oh, my gosh.
Yep.
That's going to be
cool. And the Portland Auto Show.
Roasting
Show is coming up, too.
Yeah, all the big ones right around the corner.
Well, you know, we're hitting the season.
Yep.
We're getting there.
So now, are you going to trailer your vehicle down, or are you going to drive it down?
I'm actually going to fly down and visit my parents that weekend.
Excellent.
Oh,
you're
going
to fly to Portland?
No, I'm going to fly to Sacramento.
Oh, I see.
It's been probably a decade since I've been to the Sacramento Autorama.
Oh, well, that'd be a good one.
Time to go back again.
Excellent. Keep us in truck. We'll have to do a remote interview.
Sure. Well, thanks to Jerry Heasley for stepping by. Thank you for liking and following our Facebook page. For Shane Osborne and Steve Johann, I am Brady Wright, as usual, saying keep your eyes on the road, your hands on the wheel, and your foot to the floor. Next week, we'll crank up another edition of Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust.
See you then.
Bye.
Bye-bye.